Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, it's Francis Lamb, and this is Splendid Table Selects, our mini podcast about the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. Okay, so at home right now, I have a platter full of peaches, a pound and a half of blueberries, a sack full of oranges, and the better half of an 11-pound watermelon in the fridge, and strawberries hanging out in my freezer. I almost never have the patience to make jams, and my life has now become a constant race against mold. In times like these, I wish I was a little bit more like Nicole Rucker. She is a fruit whisperer whose fruit obsession began when she was a little girl foraging her way around her neighborhood. She grew up to become a star pastry chef in Los Angeles, opened her own bakery restaurant, Fiona, and just wrote her first cookbook. It's called Dappled, Baking Recipes for Fruit Lovers, and our very own Sally Swift had some questions for her. Here's their conversation.
Hey, Nicole, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm a little intimidated by you, I have to admit, because I have just discovered that you have won KCRW's pie contest. How many times?
Yes. Well, technically 1 year I won, but I did it all in one fell swoop and won four awards at once. The downside is I'm not allowed to go back and compete anymore, but, you know.
So I was so interested to be reminded in your book about which fruits ripen after you've picked them and which ones absolutely do not. Mm-hmm. And the list is kind of stunning. Can you talk us through the ones that are picked and that will continue ripening? There's a name for them, right?
Yes, they're called climacteric. Peaches, plums, apples, quinces, bananas, obviously, mangoes. Oh, strawberries.
Tomatoes
are like a big one. I just ate a tomato this morning. Most melons, except for watermelon, doesn't really happen.
Okay, now the list that does not ripen, I'm going to read it for you.
Yes.
This is kind of stunning. Blackberries, blueberries, cherries, citrus, figs, grapes, pineapples, pomegranates, pumpkins, strawberries, and watermelons.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure I've never had a ripe pineapple.
Oh, most of us haven't. Unless you've been to like a really wonderful location that has ready-to-go, beautiful, ripe pineapples there. Most of us have not had a truly ripe pineapple. You know, it's like honeydew and other melons. It gets like thrown in a smoothie or thrown in a fruit salad and they don't really think about it. But a really ripe pineapple is fantastic.
So will you explain for us how you would keep some of those very, very fragile things that have to be harvested ripe? I mean, how do you handle a beautiful container of blueberries?
Blueberries are one of the things that you can stick in the fridge because they're going to be ripe and delicious if you don't eat them all on the way home. And they're not as fragile when they're ripe as, say, like a fig or a peach. If you get a peach off the table that's already ripe, it's going to be, you know, ruined by the time you get home. Unless you store it in one single layer and you really baby it. You know, if you think about like beautiful photos that you see of people's travels to Europe and everyone takes that like classic photo of the market that they walk by and all the fruits are laid out in these really beautiful grids, they're all in one layer and they're flat. Figs are a big one if you get them and they're gorgeously ripe and then they're all laid out in one layer, you know, they'll stay much better. But if they're piled on top of each other, they're going to get smashed. Strawberries, perfectly ripe strawberries, same thing. As soon as you can get them home, if they're like really great and expensive and ripe, if you can put them in one single layer, you'll get more longevity out of them.
Speaking of those precious things, I kind of want to run through two ideas with you.
Yes.
One, if you're going to do one super extravagant recipe out of this book, which one would it be?
I would probably make the blue and black pie. It is an expensive pie to make, especially if you get huckleberries. That makes it a little bit more expensive. But blackberries are expensive when they're really great, and mm-hmm. blueberries are precious. And you put a lot of them in a pie shell. And then, you know, an all-berry pie can be risky for a novice cook. So it is... it's one of those things that could turn out like soup if you don't cook it long enough and properly. So I would say it's really looking for the signs of doneness. And one of them is that it has to be bubbling, boiling, literally boiling, for the starch to be activated to the point where it's going to set when it's cold. Everything is, you know, dependent on the other components. So the sugar seasons and makes it taste a little bit better, even though fruit is delicious and ripe. The sugar also draws out the juices from the berries, and then that creates liquid, and that liquid needs to be suspended and held together, or else you're going to have like a fruit soup situation. So, mm-hmm. you know, you need a thickener, and that starch is the thickener, but the starch needs to be brought to a certain temperature for a certain amount of time in order for it to really do its thing and get like plumped up the starch, and then it holds the juices. So it has to boil. So you look for the pie in the oven, especially a berry pie, for it to be bubbling. If it's a double crust, then you put vents in the top and evaporation can't escape as easily. But if it's a crumble top and you don't pack it in, then you have a lot of little spaces for some evaporation to happen and for the boiling juices to kind of bust out the top and give you the signs that say that they're done and they're ready and it's safe to pull out the pie.
I have never heard anyone explain it that way before. But that
really
makes total sense that you'd have to get... No, I've never heard someone say that you need to make sure that inside is boiling to get the starch in the right place. You know, I've heard people say drain the berries and then take that juice and boil it down and then add it to the berries and then add it to the pie, which is... I suppose one way of doing the same thing, but I've
way
never
too
had
lazy
anyone...
for that.
Way.
Way too lazy. Sounds like a lot of work. It's
like
summer.
Work.
We don't have that kind of time. It's hot.
All right. And on the other end of the spectrum, what would be a really, really simple recipe for people to use?
Well, simple. I would choose simple and maybe a little bit unusual. I really love the tapioca fruit soup recipe. It's my mother-in-law Anne Marie's recipe. And it's called fruit soup, but it's really a tapioca pudding. And it's made with dried fruit, which, you know, shelf-stable and also highly underappreciated dried fruit.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, especially in the United States, we don't eat enough dried fruit other than, I think, raisins. And they get such a bad rap, too. But, mm-hmm. you know, dried fruit is such a good thing to use. Because, again, it makes the most of our resources. And if someone's gone through the trouble of drying fruit and drying it well, and it's, you know, it still has some tartness and it has the sweetness, then, you know, they're saving something from a compost bin. So I think that's a good decision.
Mm-hmm.
So the fruit soup is a tapioca pudding with a bunch of different dried fruits in it. And then it gets a little bit of spice, and you boil the tapioca in this like fruity liquid, and then you chill it, and you have this like tapioca pudding with dried fruit in it that's cold and it keeps well. And then you can just eat it with some yogurt. You know, my mother-in-law likes to serve it with cream and cookies for dessert, which I don't think anyone in her immediate family appreciates as much as I do because they're not nerds like me. But I'm like, ooh, fruit soup. I'm into it. Let's eat it. You know, everyone's stuck on chia, which, you know, I get. But like I say, tapioca is like... Tapioca's chia's like older, more experienced relative. I think it's a...
I love
it's
it.
In
from
the
Europe,
same age.
European.
Oh, yeah.
European,
you're
relative.
Like fancy, weird Birkenstock wearing older relative. Birkenstock with socks, yeah. Probably.
I love it. Hey, and also you have a technique in your book for making fruit scrap vinegar.
So the fruit scrap vinegar is something that... I think maybe we've lost touch with how vinegar is made, but we use it a lot and everyone loves salads and buying fancy vinegars. But essentially what you do is you take some scraps and you mix them with a little bit of water and maybe a little bit of sugar if they need it, and you let it sit, and that ferments, and the fermentation makes it alcoholic. And then when the alcohol has gone through its life cycle and has absorbed enough kind of like ambient elements, like you leave the lid open, sort of like making a sourdough starter. And then it turns into an acidified product and the alcohol is dead. So the absence of alcohol is then the vinegary element. And hopefully you have gathered a nice little colony of bacteria in there that create the mother. And if not, you can add a little bit of an unfiltered apple cider vinegar just to get it started. And that turns into vinegar.
Yeah. And you're talking like, you know, like apple peel or like just scraps of what fruit you have around.
Yeah. I like to keep them separated so that you can kind of taste the characteristics of each fruit. I've had really great success with apples, obviously. Apple cider vinegar is very popular for a reason, and I think it's because it's a hearty producer of vinegar. I've also had a really nice success with peach vinegar and nectarine vinegar, but that doesn't last as long in the color and the flavor, so it's more of a fresh product, and you got to use it quickly. Or you can mix it with sugar and drink it as like a shrub. Everyone's so into shrubs these days. This is like next level shrub territory. A blackberry was a little bit harder for me. I tried making it with berries. You know, it just depends on what you're working with. Apple is the easiest entry-level one, though.
Hey, Nicole, so great to have you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
That was Sally Swift with Nicole Rucker, chef owner of Fiona in LA and the author of Dappled, Baking Recipes for Fruit Lovers. You'll find Nicole's recipes for banana cream pie, strawberry galette, and that fruit soup on our website, splendidtable.org. And that's it for today. We hope you enjoyed what you heard. And if you did, tell your friends about it. We'll be back in your podcast queue soon, and I'm Francis Lamb. All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.